Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Thanks for being part of the show. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee. You can follow Golf News Net all kinds of different ways on Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram. All of those things are available at the handle Golf News Net. And you can also find my work on golfnewsnet.com as well on Yahoo Sports' Double Ball Golf Blog. We are presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's odds for our weekly PGA Tour odds posts. And what we really love about them especially is that it gives you a live look at what the betting public is doing with their money under those odds, as well the changing odds, so you can see a trend of what's happening with a player each week. So head over to BetDSI.com to check out their weekly odds for the PGA Tour, which is this week at the Valero Texas Open. But we are not starting with that, and we may not even get to that. So first, a piece of good news is personal news. Last week when we recorded this podcast on Wednesday, we told you that my wife was still pregnant, and she is no longer pregnant. About 2 hours after we recorded the podcast, her water broke, and we went to the hospital, and 12 hours later, we had a baby girl. We welcomed Rose Carmela Ballengee into the world on Thursday morning at 5:15 a.m. She was 9 pounds, 8 ounces. I have no idea how my wife did that. It was incredible to see her do it, and she made it look pretty easy, which is even more incredible. And we named her Rose after my wife's grandmother, or maternal grandmother, and then we named her Carmela after Carmel by the Sea. We went to Pebble Beach a couple months after we got married in 2010 for the U.S. Open, and we didn't want to name her Pebble, so we went with Carmel for the middle name. So then we went with Carmela, wondering that because she says caramel is caramel, that someone might think we named after a candy. So we went with Carmela. So we're really happy to welcome her in the world. She's doing great. She's very healthy. We're getting a little bit of sleep the last couple of days. It's starting to get better, so we're really happy about that. Sleep is always a good thing, especially as we get into the meat and guts of the golf season, starting with the Masters. So thanks to all of you who sent tweets, Facebook messages, all those things to say congratulations. We're really grateful. Thanks, as always, for your support for this show and all the random things that go on in my life, my wife's life, and our family's lives. So I wanted to start this week really talking about Adam Scott's decision not to play in the Olympics. He announced it Tuesday night in the United States, Wednesday morning in Australia, and basically said the same thing he's been saying for 2 years, and he's got a busy schedule, he doesn't know he's going to fit it in, blah, 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 I'm not playing the Olympics. Okay, fine. There's a really interesting uproar and reaction to his decision that we all kind of had known about. He had kind of been telegraphing, again, for the better part of 2 years. He's called the Olympic tournament an exhibition. He said he's not sure if he was going to play. He said he doesn't really understand why golf is in the Olympic program. Basically told us for months and months on end that if he was eligible to play, he was going to say no thanks. And after winning twice in a row on the PGA Tour and the Florida Swing, he won the Honda Classic, then he won at Doral. I think that pretty well gave away that he was going to qualify as one of the Australians who could make the team. There's a 60-player men's field. There's a 60-player women's field. The fields for both are drawn off of the Olympic golf ranking, which is actually really just a measure of the official world golf ranking for men and the Rolex rankings for women. And obviously at this point, with less than 3 months till the qualifying deadline, it's pretty much guaranteed that Adam Scott, unless some really strange thing happened, was going to qualify as an Aussie. He would be the second Aussie to make the team. So he kind of had to get this out of the way now. Same thing with Vijay Singh, who, believe it or not, because of the Olympic qualifying rubric, was going to get in representing Fiji. And he also announced, that was last week, saying he's not going to play in the Olympic golf tournament, citing Zika virus concerns, which I think is kind of stupid, because if you get Zika as an adult, then you basically just get a really crappy cold for a few weeks. And seeing as though Vijay Singh is well into his 50s, I don't think he's fathering any children anytime soon. So that was kind of a bogus excuse. I think he just didn't really feel like playing, and he just wanted to focus on playing PGA Tour events for money and Champions Tour events with free money, and didn't want to worry about playing, you know, under the threat of either protest from the Brazilians who are anti-Olympic golf, and there are plenty of them, or being in an environment where maybe he didn't feel comfortable, whatever it was. He came with his lame excuse, he's out of there. Miguel Angel Jimenez is also not going to play. He has said that if he qualifies, he will pass. So we've got three guys who are entertaining and would have qualified. to say that they're not interested in playing the Olympic tournament. So is it time to panic? No, it's not. Again, all of these guys, with the exception of Jimenez, have pretty much told us that they're not interested in playing an Olympic golf tournament. That's fine. That's okay. But I think this is an indication that so far, and obviously this is the first time golf has been in the Olympic program in 112 years, that there isn't a resonance with the players, especially on the men's side. On the women's side, it seems apparent. And for whatever reason, female players have gotten more into patriotic-based competitions than their male counterparts in recent memory, save for the Ryder Cup. I think the American men are kind of just like, eh, whatever, represent my country. But if you ask an American woman, or pretty much any woman on the LPGA to represent their country, they're gung-ho about it. And I don't know what the disparity is there. But nonetheless, you've got these three guys who said, all right, well, I'm not going to play. I'm not interested. And I think that they're taking maybe a little bit more of extreme and maybe premature action on something that I think a lot of guys think about. They go, yeah, I mean, I'm not really interested in Olympic golf. It's not a major. We only know it's going to be around in the Olympics for 2016 and 2020. There is a vote in 2017 of the IOC to decide which sports stay in the Olympic program beyond then. So golf is kind of on the chopping block right away, which is why we saw the format that we did and the format that we're going to have for 2016, which is 60-player fields with some expanded representation, but pretty much a guarantee of the top 20 players in the world for both men and women. And it's a 72-hole stroke play event so that we're going to get pretty much all the best players for 4 days no matter what. And that was kind of the promise that the International Golf Federation made in hopes of getting into the Olympic program, and obviously that worked. That's why they're in the Olympics. So will the format change if golf lasts beyond 2020? I hope so. For as much as I enjoy the idea of seeing the top 15 players in the world pretty much, the top 20 players in the world pretty much, battle each other out on a golf course on the Olympic stage, as a golf fan, I see that a bunch of times every year. I see it in the majors, I see it in the players, the World Golf Championships. On the women's side, I see five majors. We've got a Solheim Cup. There's plenty of other tournaments in the LPGA where the top 20 players are all in the field. Those are the limited field events with no cut. There are a bunch of those in Asia, so you may not get to see those live, but they exist. So you get to see this often. This isn't a rare thing to put this together. So I think that is where it lacks that resonance with the players. Like, we just do this all the time. Why wouldn't you just watch us in your random city, watch us do this? You know, that makes more sense to them. And I got that. So if you're going to bring back golf into 2024 and beyond, I think you've got to do some kind of team competition. You can do it more along the lines of the NCAA individual championship and team championship. We have in the same event where you have the qualifying as a team of, what, six, and you count the best four of six or five of six or whatever it is, and then the best player overall wins the individual championship, and then you go into the team match play portion until you get to a winner. I love that. I think that's the way it should be. I think having teams, and you have four players, you can do three players, whatever you want it to be. But I think you need to do that. I think you need to make it about country, and you need to make it more about country than about player. That's why things like the Ryder Cup work. That's why the Solheim Cup works. That's why, to an extent, the President's Cup works, especially on the American side, because it's Americans representing their country, not just playing for themselves, which is something that can be kind of lost in playing an individual sport. It's just the reality of it. So I think that ultimately that's where that's got to go. I hope that's where it goes. And I don't really get a sense of pushback when I express that opinion, either on Twitter or what I write or to other people who I speak with in the sport. It seems like there is a collective consensus that the Olympic golf format sucks, but no one's done anything about it, and you can't really do anything about it with just a few months left until the Olympic cutoff, and then another couple of months until the Olympics, or another month until the Olympics itself. So you've got to think about 2020. You've got to think about 2024 if golf stays in. I would love to see an amateur component to this. I think doing what soccer does for the Olympic tournament, where it's an under-23, I think that's a good thing. Or maybe you can have a pro and an amateur. You have the top-ranked pro and the top-ranked amateur as part of it. Or maybe you have three top pros and an amateur as part of the team. I don't know what you do. But I think that is a better way to get the top-ranked amateurs involved, especially in countries where we're trying to encourage, at least the International Golf Federation is, trying to encourage participation. Because the truth is that in countries like China, which are really starting to now churn out that first generation of young pros, they need an amateur game. They need an amateur to look up to. If you look in South America, the South American, which is really the Latin American amateur, has been great. It's going to be in its third year this year, next year, when it comes in next year. That's a good thing. The Asian American or Asia Pacific amateur, also a very good thing. You could have that for Africa if you wanted. You could have Middle East, North Africa amateur. There's a MENA tour that's actually growing, and growing in support from professionals, and growing in financial support from sponsors. It's going to get a bigger world ranking minimum point total for next year because it's starting to grow so quickly. So there's room there, too. There are places in the world where golf is growing, and having that amateur presence to encourage people to take up the game in the first place, where there are now professional tours there to support that. You've got PGA Tour China. You've got PGA Tour Latino America. You have the MENA Tour. You have the Challenge Tour that covers a very wide swath of Asia, Asia Minor, and Europe. We've got pretty much the world covered at this point with pro tours. We need amateur foundations laid for that next generation to get obsessed with the game, to play at a high level as part of the unpaid set, and then decide that they want to turn it into a career and build that future for the sport. Again, I don't know if that really has ultimately all that huge of an impact on global golf participation, which I think was kind of the pitch from people who backed Olympic golf, was, oh, people will see golf on TV, they'll want to play, and everyone's going to play golf, and it's going to be great. That's probably not the case. But if it creates a foundation for players who want to take up the game at a high level, then maybe those players, if whether they're successful in the Olympics or as professionals or otherwise, then they can create that influence themselves. So you're kind of using the stage to disseminate golf at a lower level, to build it up, to disseminate it at a broader level. I think that's the way to view Olympic golf. So whether or not Adam Scott's in it, who cares? I have no problem with Adam Scott deciding not to be in it. It's his choice. Kudos to him for not faking it. That happens way too many times where a player shows up to a tournament because of a sponsor commitment or because they get an appearance fee. And they're happy to be there because they cashed a boatload of money, either in an endorsement deal or just by stepping off the plane for the tournament or a government or whatever. And in a sense, that's good for golf because you get those players there. In another sense, it's not all that great because they're there to collect the money, you know? So I think that this is a very good potential for golf. Now, the question is, what will the results look like on both the 60-player tournaments? Will basically all the best men and women just float to the top, and that's what it amounts to be? If that's what we get, that's a cool tournament for golf fans. It's a lousy result for trying to encourage additional growth of the game beyond golf's power countries. If it goes U.S., U.S., Australia, or U.S., South Africa, Australia, or Australia, Australia, South Africa, all the people in those countries, they know about golf. They know it exists. Like, oh, okay, great. We're good at golf. We should win. But if you go, China, Brazil, and Philippines on the medal stand, you go, whoa, okay, that has a big, wide-ranging impact, potentially. Olympic gold medal means a lot in those countries. So, especially in a sport like golf, where, like, hey, we might be pretty good at this. Cool. So, I think that we just have to see how the results pan out. And if the results pan out in a way that we think it's going to pan out, where the golf fans will love it, but people who don't know about golf are like, eh, my country's not involved, then I think we have to look at changing the format. So that's that. The other half of the show I wanted to touch on this week is Tiger Woods. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time dissecting Tiger Woods' latest developments or lack thereof, but rather I want to talk about the detriment I feel is being done by obsessing over Woods' every single move. And we've got another case of that this week, and this is not to degrade Tim Rosefort. He is an insider. This is his job to find out inside stuff and report it. It's good reporting. It's fine. But Rosefort reported on Golf Central and through Golf World and Twitter and all that stuff. I honestly don't know who signs his check, so we'll just call him reporter Tim Rosefort. But Rosa Fort reported that Woods has been practicing in extended sessions at his home club, Medalist in Florida. He's been doing it for about 2 weeks, 4 to 5 hours a day, playing some holes of golf. He seems in a great mood. He's really happy, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's great. We have no idea when Tiger Woods is going to play golf again, for one. He still maintains there is no timeline, there is no timetable for his return to professional golf. So he could come back anytime, right? I mean, he could come back at the Players, he could come back U.S. Open, could come back for the Quicken Loans National again, come back for the PGA Championship, whatever he wants to do. It's his call. He's a grown man, 40 years old, 14 majors and 79 PGA Tour wins. He can command his own schedule. That's not the issue. I think that the issue here is we are reporting, and there's a reverberation to this. So obviously, the second Rosa Fort reported this, I did this for Yahoo. I wrote up the post, hey, Tiger's swinging a golf club again. Golf.com did it. Golfchannel.com did it. Golf Digest did it. Every Golf Week did it. Every major golf outlet did it. And SB Nation did it. You know, pick your poison. We all did it. Now, I didn't do it at Golf News Net because I don't give a crap. But I think that is the reality, that when you say something about Tiger Woods and Rosa Fort or Bob Herrig are really the two guys you're going to get that from, when you get that, or Robert Lucetich, if you get something from one of those three guys, it turns into an instant post and people comment. We have this discussion when Tiger's coming back. All of the Twitter accounts that claim to be Tiger fan sites and have inside information go, oh, I see, I told you. I knew. I told you this 5 weeks ago. And that's not true either, but okay, fine. And we talk about this guy, this 40-year-old man who has had three back surgeries in the last 2 years. It's now more than 2 years, actually. Slightly more than 2 years. He's had a zillion knee surgeries, on both knees, for that matter. He's had a broken leg. Again, he's 40 with the body of a 53-year-old man. He said as recently as 4 months ago, he has a hard time walking for longer than 30 minutes, standing for longer than 30 minutes. There was a report in January, he was having trouble even sitting up in a car seat, that he had to be transported laying down in the passenger seat of his car. That does not sound like a guy that we should be interested in covering. Bryson DeChambeau, or DeChambeau, however you want to say his last name, he is ranked higher in the official World Golf Ranking and has been a pro for exactly 1 week, higher than Tiger Woods. And it's going to stay that way for a really long time until Tiger Woods, A, comes back. That's step one. Two, then he's got to have a really good finish enough to pass DeChambeau. And then three, he has to assume DeChambeau doesn't get any better, which he's going to. So there's your baseline. If you can't beat the guy that's now pro only for 1 week, maybe we shouldn't be talking about you. I'm just putting that out there. But we do this all the time with Tiger, and he's the only guy that we do it for. When other guys get injured, it's not like we go, when Rory hurt his ankle last year, on July 4th weekend playing soccer, there was a clamor as to whether or not he was going to play in the Open Championship, because he became the first guy since Ben Hogan, who won in 53, to not defend the next year. But nonetheless, that clamor wasn't nearly the same as what you would get had it been Tiger Woods, who injured his ankle helping his kids at soccer practice. I mean, oh my, would have been panda watch, you know, 2015, kind of, you know, like from the Ron Burgundy movies, you know, from Anchorman. And I don't understand, because golf is shooting itself in the foot with that obsession over this guy who is not a has-been. He could still have days ahead of him that are good, but his era is long over, and it ended 3 or 4 years ago. And at this point, we need to acknowledge that golf has moved on. We have a great cast of young players. We have a great cast of players who are young, and we don't even know about them yet all that well. You've got guys in their 20s winning majors or major light tournaments. You've got, obviously, the big three, big four, big five, whatever. You've got Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas. Dustin Johnson is in his 30s, but he acts like he's a 20-something-year-old, so that's fine. There are other names that are coming up. You've got DeChambeau. You got more guys, Tony Finau, who I didn't even mention. We've got all these guys that are in their 20s playing really good golf that are the foundation for the future generation of the sport, and we're talking about a decrepit 40-year-old man. What are we doing? Let's stop that. We need to get away from that. We need to get away from Tiger as a crutch. And I think it's something that in the golf media community we go back to pretty easily because it's familiar. I mean, especially, I mean, I wasn't covering golf professionally at the peak of Tiger's powers, which, remind you, was 10 to 11 years ago. And that's if you're generous. It's 15 years ago. But I wasn't covering the game professionally then either. So those guys, that era where every paper had a golf guy, where the magazines had huge staffs, big budgets, lots of money, and they sent everybody every tournament, and it was great, and it was amazing, and all this stuff. And that's before we measured how popular the game was. And that's an easy upset. All that generation knows very easily how to cover Tiger Woods. They know how to get around when he doesn't say stuff. They know how to handle covering his own website, all of those things. And now that era is kind of over, you kind of move on, you readjust, you figure out ways to cover these new guys who are different. They're more open in some ways and closed and the same in others. But they at least give you more meat to work with. They talk to each other. They may not like each other. Some like each other. Some don't. That's cool too. Whatever. Different strokes for different folks. And we adjust. And then Tiger comes back and does some random thing. I mean, he burps the wrong way and he gets 20 blog posts. No, that's got to stop. That has to stop. When Tiger Woods comes onto his website or goes onto a radio show or a TV show or a podcast, wink, wink, and says, hey, I'm ready to come back, then we can talk about it. Then we can talk about it ad nauseum. We can talk about what it's going to be like, how it's going to work. We do that for as long as it takes until he's ready to play, until he actually plays, and then we start talking about results. Tiger Woods is going to come back. It's clear. He's going to come back sometime this year. We already know that. It might be sooner than we think, supposedly. So if he comes back sooner than later, we'll have a chance to dissect his game and figure out where he is, where he needs to improve, and whether or not he can play at a level that is even comparable to what the best in the world right now can do. And if he can't hold a candle to them, then we don't have to worry about him. He plays when he plays, he's ceremonial, and he starts the long golfer's ride into the sunset. And he gets to be ceremonial, and he gets to be the host at Riviera, and in the D.C. area here for his event. His foundation takes on a bigger portion of his life, and that's where he goes from here. He goes to greatest player of our era, maybe greatest player of all time, certainly most dominant player of all time, to tournament host, an occasional player, to philanthropist, focused on bringing hardworking teens and children out of cyclical poverty and cyclical undereducation and giving them opportunities to enhance themselves and their background and put them in a position to succeed. And he starts showing up to the Champions Dinner. And then he's 40, so in 20 years, he can be the Masters first tee starter with Phil. Got it? That's it. That's the trajectory we're on. So let's just accept that now and stop worrying about the small stuff. Stop worrying about whether he can swing a golf club or how gingerly he swung that 9-iron into the simulator or all that stuff. And for the fanboys, the true believers, it's over. It really is over. Let's move on. Let's let the circle of life work itself out, okay? So that is my plea for this week, is to let's just cover the good golf, not the guy who can barely golf, and we'll go from there. That's going to do it for us this week on the show. Next week, we will talk about the Valero Texas Open at the AT&T Oaks course at TPC San Antonio, a Greg Norman design I absolutely loathe, but we will talk about it, and we'll get into the results heading into the kind of cool swing that I like, where you go through New Orleans and you go through Charlotte and the Players Championship, a really fun swing of tournaments, some lesser known than others, but they're really good ones to get into. So that'll do it for us this week. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you have a chance, if you listen to us that way. And if you're an Android listener, if you listen to podcasts on your Android device or have tried to in the past and never found something you like, great news. Google Play Music, which is an app that is pre-installed on your phone, the Google Play Store now has podcasts on it, and ours is one of them. So you can go find it on the 19th Hole Show page. We post the podcast each week. We'll post a link there where you can just look for the 19th Hole Golf Show in Google Play Music, and you're able to subscribe that way. So very cool development for people who have Android phones, love the platform, but have never been able to really get into podcasting. So excited about that. All right, next week on the show, again, Valero Texas Open results, more stuff to talk about. We'll probably talk a little bit about Bryson DeChambeau and other goodies as well. Till then, I'm Ryan Ballengee saying thanks for listening. Wish me some sleep, and we'll see you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.